youth,
creativity,
entrepreneurship. Here is a series of podcasts which testify
the experience of the European project
Atlantic Youth Creative Hubs by those who have implemented it.
This project is co-financed by the European Regional Development Funds
through the Interreg Atlantic Area Programme.
Network.
Opportunity.
European.
14 partners.
5 countries.
Oh, yeah. Here we are. Welcome to a new episode talking about H Project, Atlantic Youth Creative Hubs. This podcast series has been recorded during the COVID-19 situation. Today we are in the northwest of England, in Liverpool, to meet Roy Wood, the AYCH project coordinator of Pacific Stream. Hello Roy, thank you for having us.
My name is Roy Jones. I'm director of a small company in Liverpool in the northwest of England. We work with young people across the region, and my background is academia. I was principal of a small school of art and design, and also worked with theatre, media, radio, and that side of things. So I escaped academia 20 years ago. And I've never looked back. But part of that was starting to develop support work for young designers, creatives in the Liverpool region. Most of the people we work with are designer makers, graphic design, video production, media and things like that, and gaming industry. So we started a studio workshop in a refurbished part of Liverpool. I mean, for me, I've always been involved with helping to support designers and artists. My background is fine artists by training. So I'm still kind of teaching, but I'm doing it without all the bureaucracy that you find with. So over the years, we've supported about 600 young people or young businesses get off the ground. Currently, the incubator that we run, and then there are additional numbers, including the AYCH participants as well on top of that. Well, the mission really is to, say, support young people in the area, but it's also that as part of the regeneration of the region as well. I mean, it's important that the creative industries are seen very much part of the regeneration of cities. A big project I worked on was in Russia. Was looking at the regeneration of an industrial city in Siberia, regenerate an area. For example, this city was formerly part of the providing stuff for the army and navy and everything, including uniforms and all that sort of stuff. So they had a lot of workshops related to that. And it was a way of saying, well, those workshops can become fashion studios. It was showing them examples of what had been happening in Europe and particularly how in Liverpool. A few years back, they developed 5 important planks: aerospace, tourism, the automobile industry, the service industries, and the creative industries. Now, we were lucky because we became capital of culture, and that sort of helped kickstart the creative industry side of that. It was hard to define particular examples, but generally, as people said, the city stopped feeling sorry for itself. You know, it suddenly had a new impetus, and suddenly the Liverpool brand was developed. The music industry was revitalized. A lot of the gaming industry developed at that time, etc., etc. We were funded directly by the city council to develop an incubator. And in the main, and that was people coming in to see us on a regular basis, having online support in terms of resources and things like that. But then the other side was physical incubation. You saw the one studio when you came to Liverpool that we had, where they say there's about 30 companies using that space. And basically, you know, it's an open working environment. They can easily ask for help because they can see people. They're not hidden behind screens. Some people come on a sort of 3 days a week kind of basis. standard office hours, 9 till 5 kind of thing. But most of them have their own desk, access 24/7. It's a good working atmosphere because there's not only the incubator, there's all the other smaller companies around. And they're people we can call on for support. And similarly with the AYCH project, these are people that we can use as our experts or for placements, etc. And that's what we've tried to build it up as. In fact, we don't use the word incubator anymore. I think there's got some negative connotations to it for a small business starting out. So we started to use the word creative hub way back instead of calling it an incubator. I know it's just a term, but they didn't want to be labelled Basecamp incubator. So we've just called it a creative hub. And with the AYCH, we developed a second studio just to focus and use for the AYCH project itself in the same area. We actually, some years back, won an award. We were the third best creative incubator in the world, whatever that means. But because of that, our colleagues in Plymouth had heard of us and then came up to see what we were up to. And from those meetings, with everybody else getting involved, the project was developed from that. And I was particularly interested in coming on board because I saw it as a way of extending what we were doing. It was very much complementary to what we were doing. Plus, it would give us additional funding. We carried on going, but AYCH to us was a way of funding. This sounds mercenary, I know, but it was a way of getting more funding, but also would help us develop a sustainability model for going forward. So that was very much the idea, that we weren't seeing AYCH just as something to help us for a short period of time, but because of the nature of the project, would encourage us to move forward and look at other ways of working. Plus, of course, the important thing is the networking across Europe. In many respects, Liverpool, even though it's been a port, and a bit like Nantes is, similar cities, it's still quite insular. You know, the young people haven't been exposed to working in France or Spain or wherever. And I think that's an important aspect to get people recognising that it isn't just Liverpool that's their market. Use that phrase, the world is their oyster. This is a stepping stone to getting the availability of working within Europe or further afield. That's very much the way we wanted to see it. I think what we had developed in Liverpool was quite a successful model. The possibility of using the project to replicate that elsewhere and then take it even further. For example, at the moment, thinking about the future, is that I'm working on an Anna Lindh Foundation project to take some of the things we've been doing under AYCH and some of the things we've been doing prior to that to the greater Mediterranean region and North Africa. So our partners are going to be Morocco, Egypt, Lebanon, etc. And hopefully that will be starting around the end circumstances with lockdown and everything else. That's giving us a great opportunity to do just what I want to do, re-examine what we've been doing over the years, rethink it, and get the advice of people like yourselves and others on the project to be able to develop things and take them forward. To me, it's like a really great opportunity for research and development, or they don't have the funding to do R&D. And one of the ways I've always sold European projects to small to medium enterprises, SMEs, is, look, you've got research and development paid for with projects like this. For us at the moment, it's like a double whammy. We've got the two issues. I know it's going to be difficult post-coronavirus because the area we work in, I was talking to the manager of the area, and already he knows that a third of the companies working in that area aren't going to come back once everything's opened up again. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a lot of small companies. And the creative industries is going to be hit particularly hard. So I think this is almost becoming an additional challenge that we have with this project, especially as one of our key aims is to provide and support people in employment, young people in employment across Europe. Well, this situation is just going to be make things much more hard, much more difficult.
The Big Mac, the dog and the drone keeper went to the plastic city and lived happily ever after. Who is the targeted audience of
your programs? Mainly 18 to 30 year olds. And I suppose probably 60-70% are graduates that are coming to us with qualifications within mainly art and design. But we are looking at people who think creatively. So, for example, we've got two young medical graduates who are looking at a particular app development. They've never been anywhere near an art school or anything like that. And for that, I mean, that's good for us. And I like working with people who have discovered, I've got these ideas, but they've never been to art school. And so they don't have the baggage of the art school academia education that goes with that. And the mix of people, the range of people that we're working with are a lot of back-end IT people, programmers, theatre people. But we're also working with quite a lot of business students who've done business degrees and looking at have some really good creative ideas around, again, regeneration of the city, for example. But they're coming at it with from a business point of view rather than a design point of view. If we can, I mean, you can't force those kind of marriages. And that's how the incubation, the physical incubator works. You know, random people, if you like, are coming in because it's a community. They soon get to know each other. We encourage that with drinks evenings and meetings with sandwiches and beer and all that kind of stuff. So there's a social side to it as well. The situation there where you've got the studios at the back and at the front is the coffee bar, and that's so important. There's a very good organisation in Denmark called Lind Fabriken, based in Aarhus. They started with a coffee shop, an old part of the town, away from the university and the cultural quarter. They just started with a coffee shop, and it was the best coffee in town. So people came to the coffee shop. Now they have this old factory that has studios, workshops and everything, a selling area, and it still has the coffee shop. Then that's the, you know, that's where people meet, isn't it? Yeah, coffee or alcohol, yes. It depends. It depends on the situation. But I think what we've tried to do, for example, we ran a series of evening sessions for people who were working at home, single, you know, sole traders, independent people working at home. And they weren't meeting anybody. So we tried to get these people to come in. And just for a talking shop, we had a bit of somebody to present, a presentation of kind, but really it was just to get them in and get them involved with each other. You know, they were just talking and talking and talking because they had so much in common, but they never met each other. A really good way of getting people with the same sorts of skills and interests together, whereas they never met before.
The dog and the drone keeper went to the plastic city and lived happily ever after.
What kind of project are incubated in your program?
I mean, it's been fairly, I suppose, not prescriptive, but quite a traditional approach to giving business support. The idea is that, and this works for both the physical incubation and the virtual incubation, is that we see clients regularly. From there, what we try and do is, instead of throwing them in and doing all the business support stuff, is trying to develop their idea and see how that would, if there's a, for want of a better phrase, see if there's any mileage in it. And a part of that, of course, is testing the market and et cetera, et cetera. I think, again, one of the big issues is getting people to recognise that What they don't want to do is sell themselves, market themselves, and do all the business stuff. A very good glass designer, a client of mine, started with me. He said, Roy, I said, I can make 40 of these pieces a week now. And I said, yes, but can you sell 40 a week? Because, of course, when you're making, you're not selling. And when you're selling, you're not making. Some people see that as wasted time. Design thinking, design process, learning that process and developing and researching your ideas. When you're making a living out of it, it can often falls by the wayside sometimes. They have to devote their time to developing their ideas as well. They can't stand still. People get bogged down with one program. They know it very well. And before they know it, it's the old, you know, something. So that we need to get them to understand that it's this balance between producing, making and doing, research, marketing and running the business. But if we can do it through developing their ideas initially, rather than, say, doing a business plan, I hate business plans, but it's that idea is far better where you're using post-it notes and the like rather than having to write stuff. Again, I've seen young people get so concerned and worried about the business plan, they forget about the business. And that's totally wrong. And again, traditionally, a lot of business advisors have got young people involved with all the finance stuff. And let's face it, particularly, dare I say, often creatives aren't business people in that sense. They're not finance people. So why should they learn how to do a cash flow and profit and loss and all that kind of stuff? Yes, they have to have knowledge of that and they have to have an understanding. But that's what accountants are for, or you find somebody who can do it. And I think one of the roles, initial roles of starting and developing a business is understanding what skills you have and what you don't have. And especially if you're working as a small company, if there's three or four of you, it's a skills audit between each other. And you have to do a skills audit on yourself if you're a sole trader to try and really figure out what you can and can't do. Some people can move fairly swiftly along. Some people have a well-formulated idea about their product or service that doesn't really need much intervention by people like myself. You know, they come along, they show you what they're doing. That's wonderful. You know, it just needs to be then marketed or whatever. Other people, right from the word go, have a kernel of an idea, but it needs developing to encourage the creative process and how they're thinking about it. With incubation that we've been running, I suppose we hope that in reality, they can be starting on the road to setting up their business properly and, I can say, making a profit. Very rarely do you make a profit in the first however many years, but at least they're stable and working away within about 6 months. Some other businesses, the lead-in time can be so long anyway, particularly if you're looking at computer games and the like. The leading time for, if you've got an idea, but it might take over 12 months before you can even get to a point where you can show a demonstration of what's, there's a lot of work. So it varies so much. But just developing, I suppose, the skills for the person would probably take, could take about 6 months, I suppose, really. In the physical incubation, we've had people there for maybe 2 years before they've moved on to another premises or their own premises, or he's become like a permanent fixture, so we don't worry about him. One important thing I think about incubation is having a business as part of that incubator that's like an anchor tenant, a company that's already not necessarily established but has lots of experience. It might be a new company, but it's the people of that company have had a lot of experience. So we brought in two designers. As designers, they've been working for a well-established company in Liverpool. So they had lots of experience and lots of contacts. So they were in the studio to help the others as much as we were, because they'd had that experience as graphic designers, for example. I've been working in Liverpool for the last 20 years now. So and it's a smallish city, and the creative industries is you soon know everybody. So I had all the contacts, all the networks. There was a lot of networking going on. So I had that. But I think for us, because of the funding and the content of AYCH, there was the opportunity for the young people we were working with to have internships and placements outside the region, and similarly bringing people in to and having that for us to be hosting people as well was a nice opportunity. We've done some of that in the past, but not been able to do it at the scale we were hoping for with this project. We run these sessions in, networking events can be horrible. You know, if you've experienced one, it's usually going, it's nearly all people in suits, and that's the women as well. So those kind of environments don't match the kind of environment that we're used to. And we call it the T-shirts and suits thing, you know, the business people and the bankers and the financiers and the accountants. Very rarely do you meet an accountant that has empathy with a young creative, and certainly bankers, they want a cash flow that's steady, not one that goes like this, which is usually what happens in the creative industries. So it's getting them to understand some of the problems as well. However, back to the networking events, you could go into a room and you'd meet were accountants and bankers and things like that, which is terrible. So what we've been trying to do is create networking events that are nearly all creatives. So, for example, we were holding a networking event, and a young designer wanted a musician and some dancers. And I was there, and then I was able to point them in the right direction across the room. I said, well, there's two dancers over there, and there's a gang of musicians over there. And that's where networking works, isn't it? Because it's this thing within the creative industries, it's not competitive in the same way as a lot of industry is. We're not all making widgets, the same kind of thing, you know. People are employing a particular graphic designer because of how they, you know, of their particular art practice and their portfolio. So you're not directly competing with even another graphic designer, because the work is individual and personal, and the client knows exactly what the approach that they want. I think this is one of the best things about working within the creative industries, is it's far more collaborative than a lot of industry. This has been the problem for us, because we set up the new studio in Liverpool, which was more than a slight difference in model to the existing incubator, because it was more of a drop-in centre, more of a centre where people could come in and ask for advice. And this was key to, again, the sustainability of AYCH, following where we'd have the equivalent of the help desk and everything else. It was right next to another coffee bar, and there was a big glass door between the coffee bar and the studio. And what we were trying to achieve is that people wouldn't see the difference between working in the coffee bar and working with us. So it's a very kind of flexible space that people could feel comfortable just coming in and working, maybe just for a couple of hours. If they wanted to work the whole week, they could, or they could just drop in for a short spell. Well, unfortunately, that's not operating like that at the moment. It's just an empty room. So we've lost all that kind of... That was going to be, for us, key to, as I said before, of how we could use AYCH for going forward with new ideas and a new kind of environment to work in. But I think the concept that we were developing there, and it was just beginning to happen. So that was an aspect of AYCH that very much depended upon a physical space within the environment of the Baltic Triangle area. So people were coming and going. That was the idea. They'd come to us and they could work in there. And then if they wanted a more permanent space, they'd move across the road to the previous existing space. Yeah. Coffee bar, AYCH, base camp, the studio. So, yeah.
how is it to work with 14 partners?
That's almost an irrelevant question for me, I think, in the nicest possible way, because we've worked across Europe for so many years. I mean, our first European project was 1997. So we've been used to working in partnerships across Europe all that time, and I say further afield. So we've always had this European and international aspect. And so I think we're fairly comfortable generally working with a group of partners. I mean, it's not been me without problems, and I'm not going to go through some of the problems right now, some disasters, but particularly involving Bulgaria and Austria. But I'm joking apart. But that's part of working with partnerships, isn't it? It's another way of working with people and networking and having to recognise there are differences in working culture. And part of the help sheets that we always used to provide way back was help sheets on how you do work within different countries, the cultural differences in doing business and things like that. And again, that's why I think particularly on so many levels, Brexit hit us particularly hard, because we're very European. And then all this rubbish happens, you know. Normally I swear at this point, but I'm not going to swear now.
If you could change something in this project, what would it be?
Well, it's not a strange one. Oh, the policy tool document. What the hell's a policy tool document? It's a wiki. That's only a small thing, but it's a language and it's a confusion. We would say in England, it needs to be in simple English, but it needs to be in simple Eurospeak as well. But that's only a small matter. But I think generally the project's working well. Perhaps there are too many partners, because in my head, I've always seen it more of a pilot project, and therefore perhaps it should have been more focused on maybe a particular discipline instead of having it so broad, and maybe fewer partners. I don't know. To be honest, the problem really has been the lack of the funding coming through for us. That's very personal to Pacific Stream. We've been without any funding at all since months ago. So we literally don't have any money to run the project right now, because we don't have the cash flow. And that's been the problem of the platform and everything else that's been going on with partners not being paid on time. If we'd have been paid on time all the way through, no problem for us. But we've had to more or less say, cease all the visit to Santa Terso. We literally hadn't got any money to take people to Santa Terso, should it have happened. So in the end, just one of us was going to go just for representation on the management side of it. That's been the major problem, which is the mechanics of Siggy and the platform and everything else that just hasn't switched things around very quickly, if necessary. I mean, one project we had, it was about interface design. And I'm easy going, but this is how long ago this project was, but halfway through the project, Flash was invented. So we had to totally rethink how we were delivering, how we're presenting the material, because everybody was suddenly using Flash. Well, it didn't mention anything about that in the submission. Of course it didn't, because it was written 3 years before or whatever. So you need to be able to have that kind of flexibility. The submission document should not be tablets of stone. You should be able to change things easily without all the... You've had to wait weeks and months for changes to be approved. And admittedly, we also, because of the organisations are local authorities and things, and universities, they themselves have their own levels of bureaucracy. We're easy. I can make a decision overnight about things, but if you're Devonshire County Council, it's got to go through several channels for approval. That doesn't happen with smaller businesses. So we have the flexibility, but the project doesn't.
What is your best memory of the project?
The success of the first creative jam we had. I mean, we all turned up not quite sure how it was going to work or whatever, but, you know, it was great. What a great experience everybody had. And it was good for us as well. With this Anna Lindh Foundation project, that the creative jam And so it was the experience of that that we're going to take forward through to this Annalyn project, hopefully. I had a European meeting just before lockdown in Estonia, and it was the worst organized. Everything went wrong. Nobody knew what they were doing or where they were going. But it was the best meeting I've had for years. It was fantastic. The stuff that came out of it was great because there was a great team of people all working together, and it didn't matter, you know. It didn't matter that dinner didn't turn up on time or anything like that. It was just, we just had a good time, and the results were really good. So you've got to be prepared for all that kind of thing, haven't you?
If you had to give a piece of advice on how to run a project such as AYCH, what would it be?
I'm sorry. I think it's don't do it under Interreg. Yeah. No, I mean, if we looked at the activities and the program, that's pretty good, I think. But I mean, I think we've touched on the thing about flexibility and being able to change things as they go along. But really, the actual program itself is fine. It's just been Interreg that's been the problem, and all the bureaucratic rubbish that goes with that. And I think that's what puts a lot of smaller businesses and companies and institutions off European projects generally, because they feel they're going to get so bogged down with paperwork. Yes, it can be. I've been working on ERDF and ESF projects over the years. You put up with it because you're getting the results. You put up with it because the outputs are going to be great. But this is the worst I've had experience in terms of the paperwork and the inefficiency of a certain department in Portugal. We have some, but nothing in terms of good outlines, really. Because, again, it's the kind of thing we haven't had to do. We've just made it up as we've gone along and gone by experience. We could put something together.
Thank you very much, Roy. And thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find more information about the AYCH project on our platforms. See you next time for a new episode.
Youth,
creativity,
entrepreneurship,
network,
opportunity,
European,
14 partners,
5 countries,
Atlantic Youth Creative Hubs.
Le but, c'est d'ouvrir les horizons.